Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears on WWGH 107.1 FM. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams, and now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears back at you here on the Cinco de Mayo. Getaway Friday, May the 5th, 2023. 15 and a half minutes past the hour. You're tuned into WGH Talk. And I did say earlier we were going to give away a gift every hour of the 3 hours that President Harding is with us. But we only have the two gifts here this morning. So we're going to give away a gift this hour and next hour. But we do have John in the drawing so far. He got the question right. Who was President Harding's vice president? That was Calvin Coolidge. At the end of this hour, I promise, before we're done here at noon, we are going to give away the $10 to Del Taco and the Del Taco Beanie. But if you get more trivia questions right, we will put you in this drawing, and you could be the winner of that. And then during the noon hour, which President Harding will stick with us through, we are going to have the drawing for the large one-topping Neighbor's Pizza. And it is President Harding Trivia. Now, the question that's out there right now, what does the G stand for? The G, the middle initial, in Warren G. Harding. If you think of that or find out what it is during any time in the next 45 minutes, call in 740-383-9944 and we will get you in the drawing for the $10 to Del Taco, very apt for Cinco de Mayo, and the Del Taco Beanie. Now, President Harding and I were discussing the 1920 campaign. Oh, wait a second. I think somebody's got it right off the bat. Maybe they've got it. They've certainly got a guess. Go ahead, caller.
I'm going to say it's Gamaliel. I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right.
Can we accept that, President Harding?
Yes, we can.
Gamaliel, absolutely. Is this Judy?
Yes, it's Judy.
All right. President Harding, before we let Judy go, does Gamaliel mean anything? Was it picked for any particular reason?
Yes. Yes, it did.
I don't know. Would that be like an Italian name or Greek or something?
No, it's a name from the Bible. Specifically the book of Acts, and it's a family name. I was named after a great uncle, Warren Gamaliel Banfield, and my mother wanted to name me Winfred. Nobody else would stand for it, so even as an adult, my mother called me Winnie. But the Gamaliel name, and congratulations on pronouncing it correctly. Some people, when they see it, pronounce it Gamaliel or something
words.
Like that. It's you're right, it's Gamaliel. But in the book of Acts, in the New Testament, Gamaliel was a Sanhedrin rabbi, and as Jesus was going throughout the territory proclaiming the gospel, naturally that upset the diehard Jewish people, including the Sanhedrin sect, and the Sanhedrin Jews were up in arms. We got to drive this man out of here. He's saying ungodly things. He's saying he's the Son of God, and on and on. And they're all riled up. And Gamaliel, their rabbi, is saying, calm down, everybody. Just calm down. If he is truly a man of God, then we will know that in good time. And if he is not, then we will also know that in good time. You know, let this play out. Just calm down, everybody. And so that calming influence, that kind of leadership, seemed to be a role model. And so that's why it became a family name, and why it's my middle name. And it's also why when I sign my name, I sign that G with a really big G.
Hey, Judy, you have any questions for President Harding?
No, not really.
Okay, if you come up with any in the next 2 hours, let us know.
Okay, just anything you want to ask?
Anything you want to ask President Harding, you can throw it at him.
Oh, okay.
Okay, thanks, Judy.
Goodbye.
All right. Now we've got Judy and John in, and what do we got? 40 minutes left to go before we're going to do the drawing for the $10 to Del Taco and the Del Taco Beanie. And by the way, from last week, we have the $10 to Del Taco and the Del Taco Beanie for Ryan. Ryan, if you're out there listening, you've got till 1 o'clock today to pick that up. Yours is here and already to pick up. Next question, by the way, in the trivia contest. Let's see here. How about this? Where was President Harding born? How about that? Where was Warren G. Harding born? That's the next question. When you got it, you can get into the drawing. 740-383-9944. Where was President Harding born? Now, the conversation President Harding and I were having before the break, it's the 1920 Republican Convention. There have been a lot of ballots, and we're coming in on Warren G. Harding. What's happening, President?
All right. Well, there's an important piece of setup that I think we need to discuss, and that is what led up to the 1920 Republican Convention. Got to understand that Teddy Roosevelt was considered by Republicans to be the candidate, period. He was it. And the unfortunate thing was Teddy Roosevelt died.
Let me just get this answer in here, and then we're going to come back to President Harding. Go ahead.
Was it Caledonia where they have that home over there that says that it was his home?
Not Caledonia, but a good guess. Okay, go ahead, President.
Okay. Well, so the Republican Party was left without a leading candidate. And it's hard to believe, but there was no Plan B. All of the marbles were given to Teddy Roosevelt as the de facto lead candidate. And when that didn't happen, there was a mad scramble then to find, all right, let's find some alternate candidates, which is what led us to Leonard Wood and Frank Loudon and all of that. Well, I think when we left off, we asked the question, Harding? Why not Harding? And party leaders in power were thinking, all right, well, all right, he's held a national office as an Ohio senator in Washington. He's had that for 8 years. He's got a lot of friends in Washington. He hasn't said or done anything stupid yet. Everybody likes him. He looks the part. He's, you know, he stands up straight, and you know, he's not a bad-looking guy. And his opinions expressed as a senator have been sound and generally in line with the Republican platform. Why not Harding? So my name was thrown into the mix. And so they'd gone through 9 ballots at this point, and on the 10th ballot, I was elected. I was elected as the candidate. They needed a majority plus one, and out of the 940 delegates that were in the convention hall, I was voted for by 471, which crossed the line, and Calvin Coolidge, he's governor of Massachusetts, was selected for me. The presidential candidate didn't select the running mate. The running mate was selected for him. And Calvin Coolidge had distinguished himself as governor of Massachusetts in settling the Boston police strike of 1919, which was a really contentious situation when all of the police officers in Boston walked off the job. He was able to settle that strike and get people back on the job. It took a lot of leadership to do that. Ironically, Calvin Coolidge was not at the convention when all of this came down. Now, there was similar turmoil on the Democratic side. James Cox was my opponent. But in the Democratic National Convention, it took 44 ballots to lead to a consensus that James Cox would be the candidate. Others that were running during those 43 ballots before that were Al Smith, who was the governor of New York, William Gibson McAdoo, who was the U.S. Treasury Secretary, Mitchell Palmer, who was the U.S. Attorney General. Again, for the most part, these aren't names that resonate with anybody today. And then there was another unknown fella that really was kind of obscure. He was an undersecretary of the Navy, a fellow by the name of Franklin D. Roosevelt. Not many folks had heard of him. But he was also in the running. He ended up being the VP nominee for James Cox. But the same kind of turmoil, even more so, was going on in the Democratic Party that there was in the Republican Party during the convention times.
What will ever become of Franklin Delano Roosevelt? Who knows, here in 1923?
It's hard to tell, but he right now, in 1920, he's a little-known name that's out there in the weeds.
That's right. Let's take the phone call here and see if we can find out where President Harding was born. Go ahead, caller.
The place he was born, Blooming Grove.
Blooming Grove, absolutely. Who do we have on the line?
Carolyn.
All right, Carolyn. You enjoying the show this morning?
Yes, I am.
Thank you, Carolyn. We got you in the drawing.
Okay.
All right, Blooming Grove, Ohio. We've got Carolyn in the drawing now. And I'm going to ask another quick question because I asked President Harding to bring some speeches with him today, and I want to get to these because we've got about 90 minutes left here in the program today. But a quick question here, another trivia question just to get somebody in. Now, this is a nice, easy one. What year was President Harding elected president? Now, remember that. What year was President Harding elected President of the United States? The year, 740-383-9944. Quick, President Harding, tell us about Blooming Grove versus Caledonia versus Marion as your birthplace.
Well, Carolyn, congratulations. Blooming Grove is correct, but only partially correct. Now, you still get your name in the drawing, but let me explain. I was born November 2nd, 1865. This is in the height of the Civil War. And Blooming Grove wasn't Blooming Grove. It was a little village known as Corsica. Now, when the U.S. Post Office came around to put a post office in Corsica, we learned that Corsica is not the only Corsica in Ohio. There's another one. And the post office won't let you have two towns of the same name in the same state. So we had to come up with another name. Now, if you've ever been to the cemetery in Blooming Grove, Corsica, you notice that there are an awful lot of Hardings, generations and generations of Hardings that go way back. Because a family farm was in Corsica, and generations had tended it up to that point. So we were under the impression that the village should be called Harding's Corners. Well, that didn't fly with other members of the community. So Blooming Grove it was. The name changed to Blooming Grove, and that's what it is today. But that's the story behind it. So I was born in Blooming Grove and spent my early years there, growing up as a farm boy, helping out with the chores. My father was a farmer and also a physician, but in a village that small, being a physician was not full-time work. So I helped with the chores, and when I was just a little bit older, my father gave me a 13-acre field to tend. It was his field, but it was my responsibility to plant it and harvest it. And out of that 13 acres, we planted wheat, and my profit was $13 from 13 acres of wheat. And to this day, I've never felt richer.
Now, what year was this?
Well, this was when I was about 12 years old, so it'd be 1907, probably somewhere in that range. My father was looking to grow his practice, and there weren't a lot of prospects to do that in Blooming Grove. So the family moved to Caledonia, and it was a larger community, and that allowed him to open up a practice and become a full-time physician. And it gave my mother the opportunity to join him in the practice as a midwife. So between the two of them, they were beginning to earn a good living in Caledonia. Now, that went on a little farther when my father was thinking, again, if we're going to grow this practice, the best way to do that is to move to a larger community. So that prompted the move to Marion. And when I was a teenager, my parents and the whole family moved to Marion. My father had bought a nice stately white frame house on East Center Street and established his practice there.
Now, why is Marion, though, considered your birthplace?
Well, I've spent my formative years as a teenager in Marion, and in my entire adult life, except for the time that I spent in Washington. But my adult life was devoted to Marion, and so that's why I think Marion is adopted me as the hometown boy. And you know, let's be honest, who's heard of Blooming Grove?
Well, that is, if you'd used it, though, maybe people would have. Maybe more people would have heard of Blooming Grove and possibly Caledonia. I asked President Harding to bring along some of his favorite speeches, and we're going to get to one of those here momentarily. But again, the question out there, because we don't want to interrupt the president during his speech, what year was President Harding elected? Now remember, that's the year. All you got to do is give me the year. What year was President Harding elected President of the United States? So far, we've got John, Judy, and Carolyn in the competition. We're going to draw for $10 to Del Taco and a Del Taco beanie coming up here at right around 12 o'clock, a few minutes before 12. And then we're going to do a large one-topping pizza to Neighbor's Pizza during the 12 o'clock hour. At the end of that hour, we'll do a drawing as well. But John, Judy, and Carolyn in the question, what year was President Harding elected President of the United States? Just the year. I don't need the date. Just the year. What year was President Harding elected President of the United States? 740-383-9944. And you will go in the drawing with John, Judy, and Carolyn to possibly win that Del Taco gift card for $10 and that Del Taco beanie. President Harding, what speech do we have coming up?
Well, I'll give you some choices. I have several speeches with me, and as anybody who knows me well knows that I love to be an orator. I enjoy public speaking, and I've been doing that for a long time throughout the Midwest as a not only as a political candidate but as a member of the Chautauqua faculty. So I've had the opportunity to travel from town to town and give speeches to good-sized audiences in towns throughout Ohio and surrounding states. That's how a lot of people in this area have come to know me. It made campaigning a little bit easier because I was a recognizable name in some parts of the country. But I have several with me that are favorites, speeches in which I didn't string together pompous phrases in search of an idea. One of my favorites is the address at the burial of the unknown soldier at Arlington Cemetery. That's probably, I think, thinking back as a president, one of something that I'm very proud of as a legacy. I also was honored to give the address at the dedication of the Lincoln Memorial. Again, I think that's one of my favorite speeches. I have an inaugural address. I have an address given for the 50-year semi-centennial anniversary of Birmingham, when I gave my very candid opinions about race relations in the United States. And then one that's just kind of near and dear to my heart. It's a speech that thanked the citizens of Marion for all they did during my campaign. As I sit here in Marion, and it's good to be back in Marion. I love Washington, but it's wonderful to be home. You know, that's a speech that I think resonates with Marionites everywhere.
Let's do that one. Let's do the thank you and the setup to this. What year was this, and what were we thanking them for?
Well, the year is 1920, and I have just been selected the nominee, the Republican nominee for President of the United States, and am in the process now of running for office. The campaign will be coming up soon. So I had an opportunity to address the citizens of Marion and thank them for their support specifically. So let's start with that.
So this is before the election.
Yes.
Interesting.
Yes.
Interesting. And again, before the president starts the speech here, because we're not going to interrupt him while he's doing it, the trivia question out here with 37 minutes past the hour, what year was President Harding elected President of the United States? What year was President Harding elected President of the United States? 740-383-9944. So far, John, Judy, and Carolyn in the competition. We're going to draw for a $10 Del Taco gift card coming up in the bottom of this hour. So once he starts the speech, we're not going to take the phone call, but I'm sure we'll have time after if you have the year. All I need is the year. I don't need the date. The year that President Harding was elected President of the United States. 740-383-9944. Go ahead, President Harding.
Well, today I want to gratefully acknowledge the womanhood of America, enfranchised with the power to vote for the very first time. Women who overwhelmingly, I hope, cast their very first votes for the Harding-Coolidge ticket. And I want to thank members of the Daughters of the American Revolution for their tireless efforts to pass this vital milestone in our civil liberties. Tennessee was the last state needed to ratify the 19th Amendment. That's less than 3 months ago that happened. And as this campaign is progressing, our polls tell us that I'm leading in that state, and hopefully on track to be the first time a Republican candidate has carried a former Confederate state since the Civil War. Well, the campaign's well underway, and now I'm home again among friends. I feel a little bit more at liberty to speak to you a bit informally. Besides, you've all heard me bloviating at full force during my campaign speeches. It's clear that Governor Cox and I have had vastly different campaign styles. Governor Cox and his running mate and Undersecretary of the Navy that nobody ever heard of, Franklin Roosevelt, have spent months, thousands of miles, barnstorming the country for rallies, train station speeches, making formal addresses. They call that a campaign. I call that an undignified pandering for the presidency, as he swept around the country bragging about his qualifications. So rather than fanning out to win over the people, our campaign is bringing the people to Marion in our own front porch. More than 600,000 of them so far. On busy campaign days, the population of Marion more than doubles. And I want to publicly thank the citizens of Marion for supporting our campaign in so many heroic ways. The welcoming committees at the train depot and at the city limits, on every road leading into town. The decorating committee that built Victory Way, festooning the streets all the way from the train depot to our home on Mount Vernon Avenue with regal white columns topped with eagles and my portrait. Red, white, and blue bunting adorning the storefronts, committees providing food and lodging for guests, information booths, emergency restaurants, first aid stations, the women of the households throughout the city who opened their homes and hearts to thousands of visitors from across the nation, 4 marching bands on duty at all times, some greeting trains at the station, leading guests in parades through the center of town to our home, more bands playing at the newly constructed bandstand at the school downtown, hosting barbecues for 5,000 people or more. I want to acknowledge my campaign manager, Will Hayes, and his staff, who were able to raise more than $8.1 million. That's nearly 4 times the money that Governor Cox's campaign could barely scrape together. And I want to thank Albert Lasker, my publicity agent, for arranging the first celebrity presidential endorsement of its kind, because he brought to Marion the entire Chicago Cubs team, entertainer Al Jolson, Hollywood screen legends including Douglas Fairbanks, Lillian Russell, Mary Pickford, and Lillian Gish. Now, along the campaign, there's been some inevitable controversy. Shortly after my nomination at the Republican convention in Chicago, one reporter broke a story that Mrs. Harding had been seen with scandal, a fortune teller, as though that was some sort of horrific scandal. Well, let me clear that up for you. Yes, Florence occasionally consults with a clairvoyant. Her name is Madame Marcia, and I've gone on record that I fully support Florence in that. No, Madame Marcia isn't a gypsy who conducts spooky seances. Madame Marcia is a trusted advisor to some of the most powerful people in Washington. First Lady Edith Wilson, U.S. congressmen, senators, and Supreme Court justices. Before the convention, Madame Marcia predicted to Florence that I would win the Republican nomination. All right, there's one accurate forecast. Later, she predicted that I would be elected president. Well, we'll see about that. But she also predicted that I wouldn't survive my first term and my presidency would come to a tragic end. Well, I stand before you, never feeling better except for a twisted knee from playing golf. So it just goes to show that even the most trusted psychics sometimes are just full of poppycock. During the campaign, Governor Cox has described my speaking style as an army of pompous phrases parading around in search of an idea. Well, ladies and gentlemen, here's an idea. Let's restore this nation with a return to normalcy. The terrible cataclysm of war, the horrors that have set our nation in upheaval, a tidal wave of death and destruction, were a direct result of President Wilson's policy of American neutrality, which left the United States the world's unarmed giant, not adequately prepared even for our own defense. And now that the Great War's conflict is at rest, the horrible price we pay for that peace is our continued entanglement in Wilson's League of Nations. Now, On the surface, that sounds appealing, doesn't it? A League of Nations devoted to the prevention of future wars. But the price for that is one of the great disasters of the 20th century. The formation of a global supergovernment in which the United States would surrender its sovereignty only to have our destiny controlled by the hands of other nations. But America, our America, the America builded on the foundation laid by the inspired fathers of our country, cannot be subservient to an alliance of other nations. We cannot enter into any political commitments, nor assume any economic obligations, which will subject us to any other than our own authority. A world supergovernment is contrary to everything that made us what we are. We must safeguard America first. Prosper America first. Think of America first. Exalt America first. Live for and revere America first. Many of you here today have relatives who served in the Great War. A generous country will never forget the services they rendered, which is why I proposed the formation of a new Veterans Bureau to provide a national network of new hospitals and clinics devoted exclusively to their care and recovery, so that those veterans still suffering from casualties and disabilities shall be abundantly aided and restored to their highest capabilities. During the war, President Wilson and the Democrats removed protective tariffs, which brought about the economic recession that I predicted it would. My economic policy will send American working men to the savings banks rather than the soup kitchens, and repeal the war taxes we continue to pay, even though we are a people now at peace. I believe in establishing a budget for the entire federal government, down to the penny. When I operated the Marion Star, before there was such a thing as home delivery, the subscribers had to come to our office on Center Street to pick up their paper at 4 cents a copy. Most paid with pennies, and I collected those pennies in gallon jugs. Some may remember watching me walk to the bank with a gallon jug of pennies under each arm. Do you know how many pennies are in a gallon? I do. 5,325. And it will take that level of scrutiny to hold the federal government accountable to a strict and balanced budget once and for all. I believe in administrative efficiency, for lightened tax burdens, for the emission of unnecessary interference of government with business, and for more efficient business in government administration. I believe in establishing stricter standards for immigration, which are concerned with the future citizenship of this republic. America's present need is not heroics, but healing, not nostrums, but normalcy, not revolution, but restoration, not agitation, but adjustment, not surgery, but serenity, not submergence in internationality, but sustainment in triumphant nationality. Our most dangerous tendency is to expect too much of government and at the same time do for it too little. When we have a citizenship that seeks what it may do for the government rather than what the government may do for individuals, we shall do more to make democracy safe for the world than all the armed conflict that history has ever recorded. I would not be true to my natural self if I did not recognize my own limited ability to meet your full expectations as president. No man is big enough to run this great republic. Never has been, never will be. But I will gladly give all that is in me, all of heart, soul, and mind, and abiding love of country, to service in our common cause. We cannot give more.
And that was a thank you speech to the citizens of Marion by President, well, not President at that time, Warren G. Harding, after he got the nomination for president, but before the election to the of 1920. By the way, the question right now is, what year was President Harding elected President of the United States? Now, remember, we've got that $10 to Del Taco we're going to give away here in about 10 minutes. $10 to Del Taco and a Del Taco beanie. We've got John, Judy, and Carolyn in the competition. What year was President Harding elected President of the United States? 740-383-9944. You can get in on the drawing here if you just tell us the year. All we need is the year. President Harding, what do we got about 10 minutes left in this hour. Do you think we could get another? Is there a shorter speech there? Do you think we could fit in?
I think we can do something here. Let's see.
I knew we would get a call on this one. I think the person might have the year here. Let's go to the phones. Go ahead, caller.
Was it 1921 he was elected?
Well, you know, 1921.
I think he was about 2 years.
Now, 1921, he would have been inaugurated, right?
Right.
But not elected.
Right. The election happened in November of 1920.
Right.
And the inauguration happened May of 1921.
Right. So, I guess that is not a right answer, because elected would have been 1920, not 1921. Right?
Right.
Right.
Oh.
Did you enjoy that speech, the thank you to the citizens of Marion?
Well, I heard some of it. My neighbors got a sale, so I ran over to the sale.
Yeah, it was very good. Very good. Well, hey, thanks.
Yes.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
All right, let me try to get one more trivia question in here before we go back to the president. Okay, let's see here. Do you have something, President Harding? A nice, easy softball trivia question about yourself?
What is my favorite food that Florence prepares?
Oh, see, I know this one. What favorite food, what is President Harding's favorite food that Florence prepares? Favorite food that Florence prepares, and if you can get us that answer in the next 9 minutes, you'll be in the drawing for the Del Taco gift card, $10, and the Del Taco beanie. Favorite food that Florence Harding prepares for Warren G. Harding. 740-383-9944. Okay, President Harding.
Since we've got just, what, maybe eight minutes, nine minutes? Yeah, we probably don't have time for a speech. I can't say hello in 9 minutes.
Well, we'll save the speeches for the next hour.
Okay.
But something to clear up here in this particular hour is your presidency. When you came in, what was the first, you were inaugurated in May of 1921, what were some of the first things that you did that were important to you upon taking that office?
Well, let me go through some 1921 accomplishments. I was inaugurated on March 4th, and as I tell you about some of these things, some of these are going to be obscure little treaties, but I'll try to explain them and so you understand the significance of them. In April, I pushed forward to Congress the Thompson-Yerusha Treaty. I signed that into law. The Thompson-Yerusha Treaty was a treaty with Colombia that granted the country of Colombia $25 million as compensation for the loss of Panama, which at one time was associated with Colombia but gained its independence in 1903 with the help of the United States. And Colombia didn't forgive us for that, so this treaty gave them some reparations to try to settle things. In May of 1921, I signed into law the Emergency Quota Act, which limited the number of immigrants from any given country to 3% of that nationality already in the United States by 1910. That temporary act is expected to last for 3 years, and some are predicting that it will be a precursor to a harsher and more permanent act that may come later. That law represents a growing nationalism in the 1920s, motivated in part by the massive influx of South and East European immigrants into the United States following the end of World War I, especially Italians. There was a massive influx of Italians. Later that month, I signed into law the Emergency Tariff Act. That was in response to public opinion. What we did was raise taxes, mostly on farm products, and that was designed to protect American products and provide some relief to the end of the post-war recession. Also, we transferred oil control. This is a significant thing. This was not widely publicized, but in May of 1921, Secretary of the Navy Edwin Denby transferred control of the naval oil reserves in California and Wyoming to the Department of the Interior, which is headed by Albert Fall. The reserves, oil reserves at Teapot Dome, Wyoming, will later figure prominently in negotiations with oil companies that will extract that oil and make it available to the Navy, because the Navy is in the process of building a new port at Pearl Harbor. Well, there's no oil in Hawaii, so it means that any oil to fuel those ships is going to have to be extracted and imported into Hawaii and stored locally there at Pearl Harbor in giant tanks. So that'll be a big government initiative coming up in the year or two ahead. Also in 1921, I signed into law the Budget and Accounting Act in order to better organize the federal government's accounts. That act establishes the Bureau of Budget and the General Accounting Office under the Treasury Department. In June of 1921, I appointed Taft, William Howard Taft, as Chief Justice of the Supreme Court.
Former President.
And the as I came into the presidency, the Great War was over, but the treaties had not been officially signed. So technically, we were still at war with Germany and Austria. So in July of 1921, I signed into law a joint congressional resolution that declared the official end of the war with Germany. And that just starts the whole discussion of war reparations, and that's something that will be determined over the years ahead. So those were some early accomplishments.
Do want to let people know we're going to do that drawing in about 4 minutes. Now, we've got a whole nother hour with the president. We're going to go through some speeches, some very poignant speeches, and a little more trivia here with Warren G. Harding. We've got 4 minutes left. The question here to get in before we're going to do the drawing for this Del Taco $10 gift card and a Del Taco beanie is, what was Warren G. Harding's favorite food that Florence cooked for him? And I'll give you a hint, it was a breakfast food. A breakfast food, typically thought of as a breakfast food. Does anybody know what it is? You've got 4 minutes here to get in on the drawing. So far, John, Judy, and Carolyn are in, and we're going to be giving away that Del Taco $10 gift card, 740-383-9944. President Harding, what type of things were out there that people could buy or use to campaign for you in 1920?
Well, we had in our campaign, we'd taken a different approach. I wanted to professionalize the campaign. So I hired Albert Lasker, who was an advertising man and publicist. He was with a firm called Lord & Thomas in Chicago. And he was the brains behind advertising that had been done for Sunkissed Oranges and Wrigley Gum, Kleenex, Quaker Puffed Wheat. He was the one that came up with the slogan, "Shot from Guns." So when we started the campaign, Albert Lasker unleashed a broad-based advertising campaign that implemented modern advertising techniques that had some serious strategy behind it. The approach included lots of newsreels and sound recordings. Anytime you went to the movies, there was a newsreel that gave you the goings-on, and Albert Lasker made sure that I figured prominently, my campaign figured prominently in those newsreels. Farmers were sent brochures decrying the abuses of Democratic agricultural policies. African Americans and women were given literature in an attempt to take away votes from the Democrats. There were billboard posters everywhere. Newspapers, magazines were employed. 5,000 speakers were trained by our campaign, and they were sent across the country to speak for my campaign. 2,000 of those speakers were women. Telemarketers were making phone calls using finely tuned scripts. Albert Lasker had 8,000 photos distributed around the nation every 2 weeks of me, my wife, and Laddie Boy. Unfortunately, Laddie Boy became more of a celebrity and got more press coverage than I did. So I was a bit perturbed by that. Albert Lasker brought the Chicago Cubs to Marion in an exhibition game with the Marion Kerrigan Tailors. That was in September of 1920, and I pitched in the game. The true purpose of that event was to generate moving pictures of me playing and talking baseball with members of the Cubs, including famed pitcher Grover Cleveland Alexander. And then once shot, these films were sent to the nation's theaters and newsreels. Broadway stars, which you know, I had mentioned earlier in my Thanks to Marion speech, Al Jolson, who wrote the tune Harding, You're the Man for Us, and then others I had mentioned, like Mary Pickford and Douglas Fairbanks. Business icons, Thomas Edison, Henry Ford, Harvey Firestone came to Marion. And during the course of the campaign, more than 600,000 people came to Marion. Many of them standing in the front yard and in the street and in the yards of the properties surrounding our home, to the extent that the yard in our home was dug up and replaced with gravel so that it wasn't just a mire of mud for everybody.
Very interesting. President Harding, give me a number between 1 and 3. 2. 2. Number 2, the winner today is Carolyn. Carolyn, you can get your Del Taco $10 gift card and your Del Taco beanie before 1 o'clock if you want to come and pick it up today, or it will be here next week. But Carolyn is the winner. Next hour, a large neighbor's pizza, one topping, will be giving away, and more with President Warren G. Harding. Don't you dare flip that dial.
Have a good one.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hold on to you. How about that?
Remember, you can listen to WWDH Radio anywhere in the world by downloading the free TuneIn app on any mobile device and searching WWDH. Programming on WWDH Radio 107.1 FM is supported